Hello everybody and welcome to episode 32 of All Your Base Podcast. I'm Cheese and Beans and you can find me on Twitter at Jimmy2Times.
And I'm Nefarian and you can find me at Nefarian on Twitter.
Right then guys, so this week I did put a little post out on Twitter earlier and I guess for me this show's been a, you know, it's been in the kind of the pipeline for a little while as one of the first games I played with John was Destiny, and that's really what we're going to be looking at and covering on this week's show. The Destiny universe has nearly kind of been a year with us. There's been some highs, there's been some lows, there's been some cheeses, and we're going to try and get as much as we can covered in this week's show. So, what has been, for you, John, what's been kind of the best part of Destiny as a whole for you, mate?
Probably the loot cave.
Yeah. Master Raoul.
No, I'm obviously taking the... what's been the best part for me? Doing the first raid was probably the best part.
I'd have to agree there, mate. I think that the Vault of Glass, I mean, that was the first time that I'd done any kind of, I guess, gaming like that, you know, the kind of raid thing. I know with the kind of... you've got, you know, a bit of a background with MMOs and stuff, and you know, we spoke before about the kind of raiding system they have on that. But I've not really done that before, and I think when it first came out, and you know, it just seemed so difficult. You know, what were we supposed to be doing? Where were we supposed to be going? How are we supposed to be beating this guy? You know, how are we going to get across this big sort of chasm? These gargoyles, what they're called, these gorgons keep catching us. It just seems so hard, and. Yeah, I mean, for me, that's probably up there with, in even just gaming terms, not just with Destiny, but probably one of the highlights of my gaming life, I guess. You know, ever since I've been gaming, that's probably one of the high points was finishing that on hard, you know, for the first time. I always kind of felt that the loot drops in there were a little bit skinny. You know, I mean, you could pick up some good gear from the Vault of Glass. Weapon-wise, I mean, yeah, the gear was, you know, good as well, but the weapons from there were pretty cool. Do you have a favourite?
What, a favourite weapon?
Yeah, but anything you've kind of picked up from the Vault of Glass, though, specifically.
To be honest, I haven't picked up that much from the Vault of Glass.
And this is what I mean. Yeah, I mean, I know you've played it, you know, a fair few times. And
well, we did it. I've run it on normal quite a few times, but I've not done it on hard yet. But the problem was is we started running it, didn't we, before they upgraded the loot system.
Yes.
So obviously we started it in September.
Yeah.
I mean, my what impressed me was more the difference in the environment between. Just the rest of the sort of normal kind of outdoorsy stuff to going inside and seeing this sort of giant alien sort of structure underground was pretty impressive, and I think that was what did it for me. But I'm a little obviously less impressed when you've been in it about five times, but it's still one of the, I think, one of the best looking parts of the game for me anyway.
Yeah, I think
it's an interesting environment to sort of traverse.
It is, you just keep going down and
yeah. But you're also you're kind of going over if you're jumping across as well, so it's kind of, and you can get lost in there, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, you can.
Whereas the rest of the game feels quite small. You can't really get lost on, say, the moon or on the Earth. It's only kind of the bigger maps like Venus, bigger planets. But, I like it. I mean, I like most things about Destiny. I like the art style. I do think they did borrow a bit from the Mass Effect crew. But there did seem... Do you know what I mean? If you think about when you... I don't know if you've ever played through the Mass Effect games, but they obviously took inspiration from some of, you know, BioWare's art stuff.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I've not... I'll be honest, I've not. But one thing I did notice was when I started playing through on Borderlands 2, which came out before Destiny.
Yeah.
How much a lot of the guns in Destiny are actually, you know, look very, very similar, almost, you know, bordering on copyright, really, to the guns in Destiny.
Bit of cut and pasting going on there, then.
It seems that way, yeah, yeah. I mean, there was a sniper rifle on Borderlands, which was just a spitting image of the Vex Mipha class. I couldn't believe how similar it looked, to be honest. Mm. But yeah, the art style is, you know, is great, and it actually transfers across kind of really well. We've kind of double dipped in the house, and, you know, I play it on the PS4. My lad Tom plays it on the PS3, and okay, it hasn't got the yeah, it's not as sharp on the PS3, you know, not at all, but it still plays pretty well on the PS3, yeah. So, you know, they've done a good job there.
Yeah, I heard a rumour that the PS3 version was easier than the PS4 version, which, and I don't know, this could be true, or maybe it's because that you've got limited resources, memory of how many enemies you can have on the screen at once and stuff like that.
I found the PvP is definitely easier.
Is it?
That's interesting. I mean, whether it's because the characters aren't moving around so quick or whatever, but I definitely have found that my KD ratio is higher on the PS3 than it is on PS4.
Mm.
Definitely.
Weird.
So there may be some truth in that. It is a bit weird, yeah. But going back to the kind of the Vault of Glass there, what I really like at the, when you're kind of right at the, I don't think we're giving away any spoilers here, boys and girls. If you've not been to the end of the Vault of Glass yet, then you know, you haven't been playing Destiny properly, but in my opinion. But at the end there, when you kind of, you're in the Vault of Glass at the end, and you've got the little shards of glass that are kind of sort of glistening in the light.
Mm.
I thought that was such a badass feature, man. I mean, still now it's pretty hypnotic.
It's a shame, because, like, if we actually talk about the encounters themselves, you know, some of those mechanics that they use are a bit cheap.
Yeah,
you know, and it doesn't fit in with how much time's been spent working on the environment and making it look organic rather than just somebody's slapped a building here or put a shiny thing there.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like the Vex who are in there have actually kind of made it their own sort of home type thing. You know, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, we'll talk about the raids as a whole. I mean, for me, the Vault of Glass, we were talking a minute ago fair about how kind of, you know, sort of cheap and sort of lazy the Crota's End raid sort of feels, but doing these raids was the first time I'd ever been exposed to what is known as, in the trade, I believe, as cheesing, which is basically
which
the art
you've become a master of.
And, yeah.
It's a short space of time.
I know, yeah. It's basically just exploiting, you know, it's basically finding something that's broken in the game or a mechanic that's not quite working and then exploiting that to the team's advantage. And I think it, you know, it really goes to show kind of how far people would go to find out about these things when, you know, there was this massive surge in people kind of when they found out that Crota was deathly allergic to you pulling the LAN cable out of the back of your system. I thought that was absolutely awesome, you know.
Yeah.
How, you know, the kind of end game boss you could beat so easily just by the timely pull of a plug from the back of your console.
But that also shows how badly tested it was.
Oh, definitely, mate. Definitely. And we were sort of speaking about it off air, and just how bad, in comparison to the Vault of Glass, the Crota raid was. It felt so sort of lazily put together.
Not to mention there was like glitches on every stage.
Yeah.
Not just like. All right, there's a couple of glitches in the Vault of Glass, but it's not like it, in Crota. I can think about four or five.
Yeah.
Not across every stage, but it's not that impressive for a company that is. I don't know. Maybe this is a learning thing for them, that they're learning how to make stuff. But Activision own Blizzard, and they are masters of raiding because they've been doing it through WoW for like over a decade. Now, they could have got somebody from Blizzard to pop down and check the mechanics of it, or run it, or test it. People from Blizzard would have picked that up straight away, because the Blizzard's reputation for raiding is really, really high.
Yeah.
In other words, you know, the raids are interesting, they look good, but they also are fun to play. They're hard to master, but they're not unfair. You know, you can't just... You know, sometimes there's the odd glitch. I mean, there was one when WoW was first released. You could actually pull a raid boss out of the raid. So imagine like being able to pull Crota from underneath his lair out into the actual game world itself and into, say, a city.
Hmm.
Because there was a bug, and somebody just ran out of the dungeon, and the end boss would just follow them and go wherever they were. So if they ran into a city, the end boss would just go in there and just start mashing anybody that was around, which was quite entertaining, quite funny. But
yeah,
you know, those are the shared experiences that I've always. I mean, my WoW gaming years are some of the best ones in my life, if I'm honest.
Yeah,
because I was, you know, in a tight guild, you know, raiding regularly with the same sort of 30 people. For like 2-3 years, so and also like with Destiny, like the clans, and like, it doesn't really mean anything, you know.
No.
Whereas in WoW, when you know people knew whose clans were what clans, if you see what I mean. You know, I can't remember the first people to date Town Crota, but I can remember some of the most notorious guilds on WoW that used to first down bosses and things. And also the fact that the raids were more regular, like you'd have a raid, you'd probably have about 4 raids a year, new raids in WoW. Whereas what we've had 2, haven't we? Well, 1 2. Since release.
Yeah. One was obviously with, you know, vanilla Destiny, and then we've had sort of the half-assed attempt, which was Crota. But talking on, you know, the communities and stuff there, you know, you mentioned about guilds and stuff.
Yeah.
Something I've noticed about the sort of Destiny community, at least the part of it that I'm involved with, is that it's quite kind of fickle in that, you know, sort of clans will appear and then disappear almost overnight. Maybe not overnight, but, you know, sort of relatively quickly. I know that kind of when you know, we first sort of started, there was a clan that I was kind of initially in, which Shaolin Monkeys, give them a shout out, great bunch of lads, Pikachu Boy, Mr. Midnight, Voodoo Wigs, Mr. D to you. Did you join up with the Shaolin Monkeys, John? I can't remember, mate.
I did honest. For a short while, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there were, you know, yourself, and then there was like Cannibal Ox, Tickle the Pink. There were a few of us there. And it was some good times had, man. I really enjoyed playing with those guys. But then the raiding just dried up, and whether that was because, well, I know why. I mean, there was a couple of the guys that weren't big fans of the raid. You know, there were other guys that maybe then preferred to play other games. You know, Destiny got a bit old for them a bit quickly. And then there's the timing issue, you know, where, you know, people are not able to get on at a certain time and stuff. And when you've got a clan of, say, you know, what, maybe 12 people, something like that, then it becomes very difficult to do a 6-man raid if there's only 4 of you on. And that became, in my part anyway, you know, a little bit frustrating and stuff.
Yeah.
And then from there, kind of moved on to... the clan that I'm with now, which is the Allied Brothers in Arms, and the kind of good thing about them is, I suppose, is that, you know, they're from different sort of countries, there's different time zones, but everybody seems to be on, you know, kind of at the sort of same time. But even in that, you know, there was a bit of a pecking order, you know, whereas there would
How it used to work is as if your guild was big enough, you could run 2, 3, 4 raid groups.
Yeah.
Right, so then you'd have like your leadership, which would be like the person that owned the guild.
Yeah.
You'd have officers, and they're people that would would, you'd say, look, you have a calendar on the computer and basically you just sign up for your availability. If you don't turn up, you lose your place. Simple as that. And then you get put at the bottom of the waiting list, you know, if you keep doing that, because, you know, you're just obviously not serious about it.
Yeah.
And then obviously you had, you're all on TeamSpeak, you know, you could organise it a lot easier because, I mean, TeamSpeak, you know, you can have, say, I don't know if there's a limit on parties on PSN, but, you know, it's TeamSpeak's a dedicated party chat system, so it's not tied to the game itself, so it doesn't, you know, lag the game or anything, which is pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, you can have eight up to eight in a PSN chat, can't you? And then if
you're with TeamSpeak, you can have like 50, 100 people probably.
Oh, wow.
On this thing. Yeah. You know, yeah, but that's MMOs. That's why they've always been on PC, because they're, you know, you need a lot of infrastructure to be able to get that to work properly.
Yeah, and kind of management of the, you know, of that. But yeah, I mean, what, when I sort of mentioned about kind of pecking order, you'd have the first. There was always kind of the, like, four kind of guys. Two of them were kind of, I guess, the guys that created the clan, and then they were kind of their two. Excuse me, their two kind of right hand men. I guess they were the four people that would always do the raid.
Yeah,
and then there were only two spots up for grabs. So,
oh, right. Okay.
You know, and then, you know, what then sort of started to happen was that rather than doing one raid and then sort of changing the party, they would do the raid three times. When, you know, everyone's kind of a level 30 or, you know, 32, doing those raids, it was taking a bit of time. And, you know, you could be waiting 2, 3, 4 days before you could get into a raid, which was a bit of a pain in the arse. And when Crota came along, things kind of changed a little bit. You know, other people had dropped out, other people had maybe moved up that pecking order a little bit. You know, people had the more desirable guns, which we'll get onto, you know, in a minute. But it just, I guess for a while it worked. But then now that a lot of it is, especially, you know, with the House of Wolves dropping, you know, you've had these, you know, a lot of it's kind of 3-on-3, or with the Prison of Elders, it's like a 3-man fire team. That has caused a massive rift in at least the clan that I'm playing with, in that people are generally sort of gravitating towards the better players or the players that have got the more kind of desirable weapons, you know, aka Gjallarhorn. And it's what's happened there is that it's caused a massive divide in the, at least the clan that I'm in, and people have left. They've gone off to play, you know, Elder Scrolls or whatever else it is that, you know, that's out at the minute that they're deciding to play. And my perspective, from my point of view, and my experience, talking to the other guys that I'm still playing Destiny with, in, you know, there seems to be almost now a little bit of negativity in that when the Taken King does land and there's going to be a new raid and stuff, is that these guys that are now, who are still kind of under the, you know, the clan kind of banner, when they come back, it's where exactly are they going to fit into the clan? Because they've gone away for whatever reason, they're almost seen as deserters, you know, and, you know, coming back, you know, whereas at one point, you know, one of the guys that started the clan, when he now comes back, he's going to be, you know, he's ranked right down near the bottom now. You know, he's left us. He's, you know, he's not doing. And I mean, I'm not talking. This isn't me that's kind of saying this. This is the sort of general feeling I'm getting, is that, you know, he's kind of bailed on us, and, you know, now, you know, now there's going to be a bit of a wait now for him to get a turn, or for some of the others to get a turn to get into these, at least the early weeks anyway, to get into the raids. And I've never really experienced that before in gaming. It's weird.
Yeah, but if you can imagine like football team or whatever, you always get your first team and your second team, and it's like you used to have in WoW, you used to have what you call progression raiding, and they were the people that would go out and spend like 8 hours on the new raid trying to work out what to do.
Yeah.
And then you'd have the regular ones, and then you'd have ones that would help people to boost up their gear.
Yeah.
You know, so then, you know, it makes sense for everyone to be more effective, not just like three people to have all the best gear.
Yeah.
So you would take people through that maybe weren't as confident or as experienced as the other people. That's how your guild would progress, and that's how your guild rank would go up, because it would be based on the rank of everybody in the guild. The problem with that system then is you get people that only want people that are amazing in their guild.
Yeah.
So you create some like elitist system, which is what's happening to Destiny at the moment with the unbalance. Has come the consequence that people only want certain people that are going to give them an easy ride. That's really what they're saying.
Yeah, that's something that I'm seeing a lot of on the forums and stuff. You know, when you're kind of looking to do some Prison of Elders, or you're looking to do some Trials of Osiris, or you're looking to do a Nightfall, it's only reply if you are a level 34 with maxed Galahorn, not even just Galahorn, maxed Galahorn. And it's like, really? I mean, is this what it's come down to now? I mean, I play with anyone. It doesn't matter what level they are. If I can help them in the early stages of the game, or even the later stages of the game, to get them to a point where they can do the Vault of Glass on normal. You know, I've done that before with a few of the American guys that I play with, and it's not just about end game for me. Once you've done it a couple of times, there's no gear that I really want or that I really need, and there hasn't been for a long time. I'm going through now maxing out guns that I picked up probably early doors in Destiny. Mm. But you are seeing that a lot of, if you're level 34 and maxed out Galahorn, and you're right, it's basically so they can get an easy ride of it. And I mean, while we're talking about the Galahorn, let's address the elephant in the room, and that is the weapons in Destiny, and I guess with the random number generator that they apparently use in this game. Some of these weapons have just never dropped for anybody, and I guess that's what makes them more kind of desirable for them to have in your team, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, people will be looking for people that have got certain weapons because it just makes life easier, doesn't it? There's no point to, why take down a boss in 60 hits when you can do it in 10 with the right weapons? So, and then efficiency comes into it. But in terms of the guns are weird because I don't really understand. They're so... I can't see how they could be balanced because there are so many variables involved. And to balance... I think about Battlefield 4 is the only one I can compare it to. No gun is better than any other gun. But each gun is good and in the right situation. So... there's not a situation where you can't switch to alternative and still get still perform adequately with. Whereas with Destiny, it's very because you've got all the shield resistance and that. I mean, it's not like shooting a tank. It's still going to do damage. You won't do any damage, will you, at certain levels if they got full resist, and you haven't got the right element gun or, that system seems a bit. The whole thing seems a bit weird, It's like, why can't you have somebody behind you that can drop an ammo pack, similar to Battlefield? Why do you have to... Why restrict ammo in a raid? I don't get that. It doesn't make sense. And look how much Crucible's improved since they restricted, like, the heavy ammo drop, which was another ridiculous thing that there was always heavy ammo around almost, so it became like a rocket fest.
Yeah.
But now, it's not just one or two guns that's unbalanced, it's a whole range of weapons.
It is. I mean, for me, I'm going to point out the two kind of main offenders as of recording of the show, and I do know that they're bringing, obviously, anyone that plays Destiny, follows anything on... Planet Destiny or the Bungie.net site, whatever, they're going to know that there is a big nerf incoming, and that a lot of guns are going to be taking a hit. Some are going to be getting an improvement, Necrochasm being one of them. Very, very difficult weapon to get. You need to do a lot of things. You need to put a lot of time in to get that gun, and it's just a pea shooter at the minute. So that's going to be getting a buff, which is welcome, and I'll definitely be giving it a try when they buff the auto rifles.
because our listeners won't necessarily know, what they've basically done is they've been logging what people are using, basically.
Yeah.
And I think Galahorn was used by like 38% of the of the people, and which is a lot of people when you think that not everybody's got it.
Yeah.
So 38% of everybody that plays Destiny is using the Galahorn. So I mean, they got all that data, didn't they? They can mine it all out. They can see who's using what, because every strike, every raid is logged anyway, because it would be.
Yeah.
Because you got the loot tables and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, they log everything. So they can quite see if people are abusing certain weapons and or doing a glitch or whatever.
And it's basically, you know, you've got Galahorn for PvE, and PvP you've got Thorn, and they are at the minute the two most overpowered weapons in the game, and they have been for a while. I mean, Thorn initially wasn't; it got a bit of a buff, you know, a while back, and sort of since then, and especially with the Trials of Osiris, since that's landed, that seems to have taken a massive jump in people using it. Every week when I'm playing that game, that game mode, everyone's got, you know, using last word thorn, the occasional hawk moon in there, but you know, it's just basically thorn, you know, as a whole. And then with anything kind of PvE, it's Galahorn, because it just makes everything so much easier. You've got them wolf pack rounds and they just eat things up. You know, when you're talking about Nightfalls, and you know, I've actually done a raid where every person in the team had the Galahorn. When we got to, this was on hard, I got to Atheon, and we finished him before he could teleport us for the second time. So, you know, he kind of comes out, he teleports three of them. But when they came out, that first attack when we attacked him, we finished him off in about, I don't know, 25, I think it's about 25 seconds, just using Galahorns and weapons alike. It was absolutely ridiculous. And that's end game, you know, that should be a lot harder than that. But with that gun, or that launcher, should I say, it eats things up, and I think it probably does need a bit of a nerf, or they could make all the other launchers and machine guns or whatever, you know, the heavy stuff, they could actually improve everything else so it makes the Galahorn not as impressive. That for me would work better.
Well, there's I don't know why they need so many variants of exactly the same type of rocket launcher. So what you're looking at is as long as it's got tracking and it's got similar to the wolf pack rounds or the early detonation proximity stuff, it's just exactly the same. I mean, I think the wolf pack rounds are slightly different, aren't they? Because they seek off once they split up.
They do, yeah.
So whereas the other ones, they just detonate if it hits anything in the way. I don't use the Galahorn. I got one, but I don't use it that much, to be honest. I mean, is it as great? I think it's a bit overrated, to be honest, but that's just my personal opinion.
I think it can be situational. So if somebody has got a, you know, solar shield, and you've got a Galahorn, it's gonna spank it. If you've, you know, something that's got like an arc shield, void shield or whatever, it's going to take a little while longer. I think it is OP, and if you were using that in PvP as well, bearing in mind that then takes up your kind of exotic slot in your weapons, that, you know, if you are playing something like Control, and you drop a galley with a wolf packs on a control point where there's a full team, you know, you're getting a lot of kills there for very little effort. And I think that for me is the biggest problem, in my opinion, with that gun, is that it requires no skill for you to do anything. If you've got that gun, then for me, if you use it all the time, then you've got no skill. That's just my opinion. I'll choose not to use it. I do use it, and I do use rocket launchers with tracking. I prefer ones with the grenades and horseshoes. Tomorrow's Answer, for instance, from the Trials of Osiris, I think it's a fantastic rocket launcher. I love it. Since I've got that, I rarely use the Galahorn now. I have two of them, and they're both maxed out. And I'm a level 34, so add me on. No, I'm only joking. But yeah, I do find that using that is a lot better. You know, it actually takes some skill. You need to plan where you're going to shoot that shot. It's not a cheap way of doing it at all. Whereas I feel the Gjallarhorn is a very cheap way of doing things. Not to say it's not fun to use, and you know, it's, you're not cheating by using it. Like I say, I use it myself. I just do feel that it takes less skill to use that rocket launcher than it does to use any other heavy.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue that also if you're moving on to auto rifles, I mean, things like the Cirrus regime, yeah. I mean, that doesn't take much skill to use either.
No.
And that's why people gravitate to the easiest option, don't they? I mean, that's what human nature in it is, to yeah, always go for the easiest and quickest shortcut you can, really.
Yeah.
I think if you... But then you see the problem with using the Gjallarhorn in PvP is it's just non-competitive, you know what I mean? There's nothing that can really counter that.
No, there's not.
You know, ooh. And...
There is, that would be the Titan Bubble. The only thing that can counter the Gjallarhorn really is if you've got a Titan with a bubble shield. Other than that, you're pretty much screwed. If that gets fired at you, you're dead.
Yeah. But then, you know, I mean, I don't really use it that often, to be honest. I mean, I can understand the draw. That's what I can understand the draw to it. I think there are other weapons that you can use that do the same job.
It just seems to be that, you know, everybody, it's like the, what's the word I'm looking for? In the sort of Destiny community, it's the gun that everybody wants, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose because there's nothing that you can really do... there's nothing really you can do to raise your chances of getting that other than, you know, well, you know, I know you've got like the exotic chests that you can kind of farm each week, and like the Death Singer checkpoint on kind of Crota, you can kind of milk that as well for exotic drops, but there's no kind of guarantee of you getting it. But I mean, that goes the same with any other gun or any other exotic bounty. I mean, I've only just picked up a Pocket Infinity. That was the last exotic gun that I needed to kind of complete the, you know, to have them all, I guess. Pokemon, got to catch them all. But that was the one thing I hadn't got. And I've been playing this game probably, you know, similar to yourself there, mate, from day dot. And I'd never ever been given that the opportunity or the bounty to get Pocket Infinity, and finally got it. I'm never going to use it though. It's just going to sit in the vault. I think fusion rifles are kind of a bit old hat. You know, long gone are the days where Vex Mythoclast was the king tearing up the Crucible. It's taken a bit of a back seat now with the kind of the surge in kind of shotgun use since Foulwinter's Lie. You know,
which I just recently got that, and I don't like shotguns. I mean, this isn't Gears of War. Do you know what I mean? It's not. You know, it's not really. I don't see where it fits in with PvE either, because I'm apart from. You know, like if you're running the first part of the Crota raid where you've got things on top of you constantly in your face, I don't see where you'd use it anywhere else.
It's very situational, isn't it? There's no range, really. Well, there's adequate range, but it's not. You're not picking things off from a way away.
You've got to also consider the huge stability issue with them as well.
Oh, yeah, massive recoil.
You know, with Gears of War, it fits in because it's more of a close quarter game than the way Destiny's played. I don't know. I don't understand what happened with that, because the Halo multiplayer stuff, which is Bungie's where they came from, that has always been pretty balanced. So they drop the ball somewhere. I don't know.
And it seems to me anyway, they've been sort of almost chasing their tails from day one.
Mm.
You know, I mean, I played the beta of Destiny, and I enjoyed it. At the time, I didn't really think I was going to get into it as much as I have. The amount of hours that I've put into this game is absolutely ridiculous. And never once did I think it would sort of captivate me in the way that it has.
Mm.
But I think the balancing issues have been there since kind of day one, really. You know, first it was the auto rifles. Then it was the scout rifles. Now we're on to kind of hand cannons and shotguns.
Mm.
You know, Gjallarhorn's been thrown in there. You know, the icebreaker, they're looking to extend the time it takes to for the shots to kind of resupply. And I don't think they're happy with their product. And you know, we're looking now at the kind of the second, I guess, I know you've had that's the third, sorry, DLC, isn't it? Because you've had like Crota, there's the House of Wolves, and now there's going to be the Taken King. But the current's kind of the third instalment of kind of DLC for this game, and it still doesn't feel like that they're happy with it. And we're going to be getting all these new weapons and stuff that, you know, and you know, there's going to be kind of new subclasses and things for us to kind of play around with. So, you know, I mean, surely could they not then have kind of waited? I mean, you know, this has been going on now for months. You know, it seems a bit strange to kind of fix it just before the release of the new DLC. Why not wait until the new DLC comes out, and then those guns that they have in that make them more sort of, you know, make them sort of not more desirable, but more effective than the guns that we have now. And then you know, offer kind of, you know, because you will be able to, I'm hoping anyway, raise the level of the guns that we have now, as you've been able to do in kind of previous sort of DLCs. We've been able to kind of buff the your kind of stats of your gun a little bit using, you know, the etheric light and things like that. So, and you know, kind of balance it out that way. I just think that it's a bit of a knee-jerk reaction. You know, they've kind of seen what's going on, and you know, and what people are using, and now kind of it's sort of, but it reminds me of like a parent sort of taking away like a kid's toy. You know, you can see people are having fun with something. Oh, I don't know what we'll do, then we'll take it away. You know, just sort the other stuff out. If the people are using that stuff, then it's obviously working. Do stuff to the other guns to make people want to use them, rather than you know, nerfing what's already kind of already working there. But anyway, it sounds like we're giving the game a bit of a panning, and I know that we both kind of really kind of enjoy it. What are you looking forward to? Looking ahead to the Taken King. You know, there's been a few kind of trailers and stuff around, and there's a bit of information floating around on Tinterweb. Is there anything that you're looking forward to particularly, John, when we're looking at the new DLC?
I'm looking forward to have something new to moan about.
Yeah, me too, man. Me too.
I don't really know that much about it, to be honest. And I'm thinking, because I was so disappointed with the Crota stuff.
Yeah.
You know, not Crota stuff, sorry, the House of Wolves especially.
Yeah.
I think I've got a bit kind of like, what's the word? Nonplussed about it, really, you know. It will be what it is kind of thing, and you don't really need to, you know, show a video of it at E3 to get people to buy it, because people are already invested in the game, they're going to buy the expansion.
Yeah.
It's a no-brainer, but I need to, you know, the nothing that I'm aware of you know, that I've heard, most of the stuff that's always on about Destiny is always usually negative, so, you know, it's a bit hard to be positive when there's so many glaring issues that still haven't been fixed, and we're going into, like, the third expansion.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
what?
I'll be honest.
Adding a new subclass might be good, but is it just going to horribly unbalance it all again?
That's exactly what I was going to talk about just there, mate. Was the adding of the third class, that little slot next to your kind of gunslinger and your blade dancer or whatever, using the hunter as an example. There, it's been sitting there kind of, you know, open for a little while, and for them to wait so long to kind of put something in there. I'm really hoping that it's been kind of worth the wait. Looking at the kind of new subclasses that you've got for the hunter and the, you know, titan and warlock, I'm excited to see how they are going to play out, because they seem to bring something new to each character. I mean, they obviously do, because what they're doing is they're filling that gap in kind of elemental style that each class has been missing so far. So that is going to, you know, it brings a bit more of a balance to each character, I guess.
Mm. Yeah, I was thinking the other day because we were doing doing the Croat Raid, and we were talking about how the Hunter is the only one that doesn't have much of a value in terms of to the rest of the raid. Yeah. Whereas, you know, obviously you've got Titan Shield and you've got the Warlock with Revive. I mean, that can really save your bacon.
Yeah,
if you're running a raid and you've got a couple of Warlocks in, you know, that can really make the difference between failure and success. And obviously with the Titan Shield, that can make encounters where you're taking a lot of damage a lot easier. The Hunter just goes invisible. I mean, that doesn't really help anybody, does it?
No, unless
they're going to go and revive you. But usually, I mean, I don't know how you play it, but the invisibility thing's more of like a defensive play in it rather than an offensive thing.
Definitely is. With the Blade Dancer, that invisibility that you have, or even now that with the Gunslinger, with the. I can't think of the name of it. I've got to do my head in. The new gauntlet, anyway, which has got the scarab on it, which now means that even like the Gunslinger can go invisible. But it is a purely defensive thing. It gets you out of the storm. You can take a lap and then you can come back, and if anyone needs reviving or whatever, you can do that.
Mm.
It just basically gets you out of trouble.
But obviously it's not providing any sort of bonus to your rest of your team.
No, it's not. It really isn't. I mean, it's one of those kind of, it's very sort of situational. It's kind of a last, you kind of last ditch attempt to kind of get the hell out of Dodge. You know, take some time, get your health back, and then, sort of rotate back round and revive your, revive your kind of fallen teammates. It feels like it's very... it's for the player rather than for the team. It gets you out of trouble, no one else. You then go back when all the trouble's gone, and you're able to kind of help clear up the mess or revive your teammates. So yeah, you're right. It seems it really has very little benefit other than the beginning part of the kind of Crota raid where you can go invisible and kind of run up to the top of the thing and build the bridge, and you just hide behind a rock, get invisible. And that's really the best kind of use that I've personally found for it.
Yeah, so I mean, having a Hunter with a subclass that might actually give... I mean, it might be something like when your health goes critical that you get, or you're the last one standing, it gives you extra armour, or it gives... Maybe it grants ability... a brief invisibility to the whole group rather than just to one person. Something that's going to be desired. I mean, I just think that if I just had a Hunter, it would be very difficult for me to get into raids, because obviously I can't think of any situation where it's essential to have somebody that goes invisible.
Like you say, with the Warlock, you've got your self-res and stuff, or the Titan with the bubble. You're bringing something to the team there.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a very team-orientated game, so I don't understand why. It just seems purely solo play-focused, sort of PvP build, almost.
But now with the with this bow that that they're bringing with the Hunter, and it kind of webs enemies together, and...
Yeah, it's more, you've got some crowd control then, haven't you? So you are kind of more useful to the team... I was going to say something and I've forgotten. But I'm looking forward to playing it. I'm just a bit unhappy about the pricing, and I'm not convinced that judging only going by previous experience, that they'll deliver what I think is £70 worth of value.
I think as well, when you look over the pond as to what some of our American brothers are going to be expected to pay, that we are being bent over a desk here. This feels like we're being really, really done over in a bad way. I think that keep it competitive, yeah, but don't take the piss. I mean, people have invested a lot of time and money into this game already. To expect people to go out and fork out £70. I mean, this isn't the 90s. This isn't a Neo Geo cartridge we're talking about. This is DLC for a game that we've already got. you know, treat us with a little bit of respect here. You know, we as a community, you know, I think with all its kind of foibles, all its issues, all its problems in the past, you know, people have stuck by this game, and, you know, ploughed a lot of time into it. So I think that really needs to be addressed, and very, very soon.
I do wonder what would happen if there hadn't... Say you could have got to, I don't know, max level in a day, for example.
Yeah.
I don't know whether, you know, and you didn't have to be so invested in it. I wonder whether it would be as popular. I got a sneaky suspicion that it would have probably got dropped quite quickly. In the same way as Call of Duty Ghosts, when that came out, everybody hated the multiplayer on it, which is like the biggest thing for Call of Duty. You've got to get the multiplayer right, because that's the thing that people spend a year playing.
Yeah, it's the bread and butter, isn't it?
That was the single player was okay, but the multiplayer was trash, and that's why it got the lowest selling. It still sold a lot because it's selling on the brand, but in terms of active players. You know, you look at, yeah, it got to a stage where even on consoles it was under a couple of thousand. It was, like, really low.
Call of Duty, I mean, you know, that's synonymous and, you know, famous for its online sort of community, its online play. So, yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know. Could they have taken and dropped Crucible and had more raids made just purely PvE like Borderlands is? I mean, would that have been better? I don't know.
I'd have preferred that.
Yeah, because most people only did PvP because they had bounties in there to do.
Exactly. Yeah. So the reason you were doing it was to upgrade the guns that you had, so you could take them into PvE and take them into the raids.
Mm. So would we have been better with six raids and no Crucible? You know, I mean, what? I know it's all. I mean, and then if you wanted a PvE, then have it a PvP thing. Then have it like an event, you know, once a month. Yeah, exactly, or a couple of times a month. But don't actually, you know, because the Crucible is only fun if it's balanced and competitive. If it's not, it's horrible.
Yeah, I've had a couple of bad experiences in there where the team that I've been on with, and not to say that I'm a fantastic PvP player because I'm not. But to go in there and you know, be beaten by, you know, like 12,000 points is not fun. People dropping out left, right, and centre, and you're kind of left there, two of you getting absolutely demolished. I mean, I never leave just on principle, really. I'm, you know, I'd rather leave having got a couple more kills. Yeah, I might have been killed like another 10 times, but, you know, I'm not going to quit. And when you see people sort of bouncing out of there, you know, there's still kind of half game time left.
Because nobody wants to feel like they're being farmed.
Yeah,
by a load of people that have got lucky with the random drop. So, but I mean, there's loads of problems with competitive multiplayer, which we'll do on another show. But you know, I mean, it's just acute in Destiny because there is such a lack of any sort of balance in it at the moment, and we're talking, we are discussing this like pre-Destiny weapon tuning 2.0. Well, I don't know why they've called it that, because they've only done one tuning, and that was to, I think, to drop auto rifle damage down a bit.
Yeah.
So, but I can see what they've done. They've decided rather than to tweak things as they go along, they just do it all in one go. The only problem with that is you can end up, if you try and change too many things at once, you can end up making it worse.
Yeah, which it really doesn't need.
So we'll see, won't we? I mean, that I don't know when that goes live. I'm assuming Taken King is at the 15th of September.
It is.
So that I do believe. I've got a sneaky feeling that FIFA's out then.
It will be out around that time, I think, yeah.
I'm pretty sure FIFA's always September, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Well, I wonder if it's out on the same day. That would be ironic, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, what to play?
But didn't, I mean, I know I'm digressing a little bit, but I mean, FIFA did the same thing when they've changed some of their subtle changes. And, you know, like you, I know you said before with the way they've changed the way you can get packs and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's always going to upset some people. So,
I mean, they're just trying to be progressive, aren't they?
Yeah.
It doesn't always work, though, that's the thing.
No. So, I mean, there isn't a lot of... I don't know if there's a lot of information about Taken King, what's involved. They're still being pretty tight-lipped about it.
There's kind of been, you know, the one trailer, and, you know, there's just been things that are leaked. And
it'll have to be something we revisit in a later show, because we just purely don't have the knowledge on what it's going to be, what is it,
yeah,
and how long is it, and how much is it. We know how much it is, but... We don't know what you're getting for your 70 quid.
Yeah, we will come back and revisit it on you know, obviously once it's been out, I've had a bit of time with it. But as far as kind of the first year of Destiny goes, I mean, how do you feel about your time spent in the game and what have you kind of got out of it for your sort of time and money? Do you feel that you've had a good time? Do you feel cheated? What do you think?
No, I've had a good time. I mean, I wouldn't play it if I didn't like it.
Yeah.
I don't feel cheated. I feel shortchanged. Is my feeling?
Yeah, I think I'll go along with that as well.
You know, like when you go and buy an ice cream and the bloke, you give him a fiver and he gives you a pound back. You know what I mean? It's that sort of feeling. Or down on the fair when you've been on the Dodgems and paid 15 quid for a 5-minute ride. You know, it's like, I don't, that's how I feel, like a little bit like I've been hoodwinked a little bit. yeah. I don't know, but in terms of the base game itself, I've got no problem with it at all, really. It's a nice looking game, it's easy to play. You know, some bits you can do in autopilot now, which is a bit sad, because I do like to think about what I'm doing sometimes. They could quite easily fix things, but they've already working on Destiny 2, so I don't know. I mean, there might only be a small team looking after Destiny maintenance. So, I mean, the dev team might be split between people that are just maintaining what's already been put in place and people that work on the second one.
Yeah. I think my feelings regarding the kind of the first year kind of echo your own there, mate, in that I've had a really good time playing it. You know, I've been a bit frustrated at times with kind of what seemed to be, you know, Bungie or whoever's kind of lack of kind of support with the, you know, with the community and stuff like that. But all in all, it's been a really good experience. I've enjoyed kind of meeting the people that I've met along the way. But yeah, definitely feel like I've been a bit coin a phrase from yourself there, mate, hoodwinked in the money I've spent.
Destiny's lucky because there is nobody else that are doing what they're doing at the moment. No, you know, there are no rivals in the market in terms of there is nobody that's got a massively multiplayer first person shooter. The only comparable game that I could think of is Borderlands, and if Borderlands decided to do like an online version of it, you know, that would be awesome as well, though, but that would be a completely different feel of game to Destiny. I don't know. I remember reading that. I went back a while ago and read the first review of Destiny on Eurogamer, and in a year it hasn't really changed that much. You know, where they said it was beautiful but vacuous, you know, like it was, I don't know, it's almost like there's nothing. It's a bit like an Easter egg, you know. It's lovely on the outside, tastes good, but then inside it's all sort of hollow.
Yeah.
So they could easily address that by just adding, you know, stuff like the cutscenes, the story that they missed out, you know, all the basics that were left out, basically.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Add the other 40% of the game, we'll be sorted.
Yeah. Sort it out, Bungie, sort it out.
Maybe that's why it was £60, because they went, it's £1 for every percent that we finished. So you get 60% of the game for that.
Yeah, the next DLC will be £40, because you're getting the 40% that we didn't give you the first time round. Disc-locked content, people. Remember it. Right, mate, well, we're creeping up towards our hour. So
yes, buddy.
Shall we call it there on that one and leave them hanging, gagging for more?
Yeah. Sure, let's do it.
All right then, matey. Well, thanks a lot, guys, for listening. If you want to get any questions into us, then you can get us at AYB Podcast on Twitter. You can email us at AYBpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to fire anything at me, you can get me at Jimmy2Times on Twitter.
And you can speak to me at Nefarian on Twitter.
Brilliant. So that's another episode in the bag. We'll catch you next week, guys.
Yep. Cheers, guys.